Welcome to the Main Street Minute with equestrian marketing expert India Wilkinson. This is the destination for all things equestrian, from horse sales, breeding, horse health, and a look into the intricacies of the horse business world. Join India as she dives in with industry leaders to discuss the challenging and rewarding lifestyle of being in the equestrian world. And get ready for the Main Street Minute.
Hi there, this is India Wilkinson with the Main Street Minute, and today I am super excited to welcome Jessica O'Quinn, who recently got back from the Mongol Derby. Am I saying that right, Jessica?
That is correct.
So, Jessica, I've known you for a long time. You and I, you boarded at my farm, and we became very good friends, and we have ridden together for years, and you know, I've always admired you and your strength and your very, very adventurous spirit. So when I met you, you were doing archery, horseback archery. And then that has led you to this amazing trip. So anyway, I just want to welcome you and just tell us about this race that all of a sudden I saw. I had never heard of it until I talked to you. And then it was all over Facebook. So tell us about the Mongol Derby. What is it and why is it such a big deal?
Well, thank you for having me, India. Yeah, so the Mongol Derby is the world's longest horse race. It is 1,000 kilometers. It's roughly 667 miles. It is a recreation of Genghis Khan's postal system. So it was the Mongolian version of the Pony Express. And so this existed, I believe, up until like the 1960s. There were still horse stations across Mongolia. Now, you know, it's more antiquated, but the founder of the race learned about this. He thought it was a fantastic idea and he wanted to bring it back. So being a Pony Express, you change horses every 40 kilometers. So one of the common questions I was asked was I taking my horse, and my horse lives on cookies and would die if I rode him 10 miles, much less 667. So,
and I know Arson, so I can vouch for that. He was like, what is happening to me? Yeah. And where is my cushy stall?
Exactly. And so the race has relationships with local herder families, and those families are using their horses to help the Derby happen. So there were 29 horse stations in the last race. So they range around 40 kilometers, so around 25 miles each. And you trade horses off every time. At every station, it is a luck of the draw situation. So you pull a number out of the hat and they pull the horses out, and you have the possibility to redraw up to 3 horses. Common reasons for redraw, like I'm 6 foot tall. Mongol horses are not tall to begin with. They're mostly, you know, 13, 14 hands high. So if I am brought a 12 hand horse, I'm not going to ride it. It's not fair to either of us. If some of them had flatter feet than you wanted, you'd be concerned that they might be foot sore, or some of them just had never been handled and they were not going to lead to an enjoyable experience for themselves or the rider. But most of the time, riders rode what they drew, and yeah, that was your horse for the next 25 miles, for better or worse.
It looked, I mean, I can't even imagine, but just, it was so crazy to watch. You know, of course, those of us that know you were following along as closely as we could and just waiting for a photo or a video of you. So just to kind of backtrack, do you know how long the race has been around? Like how long this has been going on?
It has been going on since the early 2000s, I believe.
Okay. And how far is the race? You may have just said that, but how long is
it? It's 667 miles.
Wow.
And okay. They change the location every year. So this is not like a set course. You navigate using GPS points, like we're all given the same handheld GPS. And yeah, you just go from there.
I mean, it kind of sounds like Survivor meet eventing meets endurance meets. I don't know. It sounds, I know you had a wonderful experience, but I'm going to jump around a little bit because I know the application process was really tough. I remember when you were going through that. How many people do they allow in, and what's that application process like?
They allow 45 riders. When I interviewed, I was told there had been over 400 riders or 400 applicants for the race. So a lot of people apply, a small percentage are chosen. You start by filling out a written application that goes into your riding background and your like adventure sport background. Then they will request videos or pictures of you riding to make sure that you can ride fast. Like some of these horses are going to gallop for 25 miles and you're not stopping them. So you need to be able to be a confident rider and a competent rider. And then finally, I had an interview. And so one of the race coordinators gave me a call, walked through my experience. He had some questions about like other kind of sports I have done or adventure activities I had done. And then my experience was different from pretty like every other rider that I encountered. So every other rider I spoke to about this were told on the call they were in. I was told they would get back to me. And so, and they eventually did. They're like, by Thanksgiving, you'll know. And then, sometime in mid-December, they told me. So I was panicking, thought I wasn't going to make it. I personally believe it was because I was one of two dressage riders, and the other dressage rider had been in the military. So I think they thought she was harder core than me, and they were really, really questioning whether they were going to invite some like DQ into their midst. But it all worked out. I have applied again because, as we will discuss, I was not able to ride the full race due to injury, and they accepted me immediately this time.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say you're the typical DQ. I mean, you did come from a pretty exciting background of
Yes.
archery on
Right.
horseback. Okay. So let's do talk about the preparation for this race because you clearly, I mean, I know that you are super physically fit, but you clearly have to be very physically fit to be able not just to ride, but to be able to, I don't want to say the word survive in that kind of, but what was that like just getting ready for this race? And did they tell you how to prepare? Were you able to talk to other people that have done this? Like, how did you get ready? And then also talk about what happened because I know you had a little setback. Yeah.
I have had a lot of setbacks with the Mongol Derby. So you have to be able to ride essentially 12 hours a day. Like you are changing horses, so that takes a bit of time, but you need to be physically fit to be moving for 12 hours a day. And most horse riders, even some professionals, are not doing that. So we were encouraged to, if we had, like, I own a single horse, go out and find other horses to ride. And I had people that allowed me to ride their horses, really increase your cardio. I prefer swimming, so that was my cardio of choice. And then you have to hit the gym. Unfortunately for me, in hitting the gym and trying to be a good applicant, I tore a disc in my back that knocked me out starting in February of this year. So from February to basically July, I was battling my back and I largely could not ride above like a walk. I couldn't canter sitting. I couldn't sit the trot. I may or may not be able to like post a trot. So I worked with my orthopedic surgeon working on various back injections and experimental treatments and just taking a lot of steroids and painkillers. And thankfully, he realized what the goal was. So he was pushing all possibilities and he sent me over there with just a massive amount of medications, which came in handy because the day before the race, my horse was going along. And on the Mongolian steppe, there are lots of burrowing rodents. There are big ones and there are small ones, and they all dig holes. And
Gosh.
so there are holes that you can see, and then sometimes they just dig, they tunnel too close to the surface. So when you're going around on your horse and it steps on that ground, it'll just collapse under your horse. So my horse, through no fault of his own, through no fault of my own, had the ground collapse under him, and he flipped tail over nose.
Oh,
and
wow.
I knew I was in trouble and that this was not this horse's first time, because I felt him tuck and roll. And it was just like, the horse was like, Jesus, take the wheel. And like, he took care of himself, and I got launched and sprained my ACL in my unscheduled dismount. And like, as I'm laying on my back, because I also got flipped, I'm like, man, I hope this horse, which is right next to me, does not step on me when he gets up. And thankfully, he was very kind. And I got to watch his belly as he jumped over me and like bolted off back to the start line, because many other riders had horses that were not as considerate. But yeah, I got to start the race with a bad knee. I could not walk after I was brought back to my horse. I did complete my test ride, and then I couldn't walk. And so I was told,
this is before the race started. So you got
before the race. Yeah. So I was told if I couldn't mount the horse, I could not ride the race. So I was like,
knowing you were like, I will get on that horse.
Like, I'm going to get on the horse. And it was my left leg. And you cannot approach these horses from the right side. They are only ever dealt with on the left. So it's not like, oh, I'll just go around and like hop on the other way. No, like you're using your left leg. And I did it. I managed to hang on for a few hundred kilometers before it just really gave out on me. And I had to take several days off before being able to go back the last 2 days and finish the race.
Well, I know that was a setback, but you definitely have proven like how strong you are and determined, which, you know, I know everybody had a story over there.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
Yes, you're getting out of Mongolia without a story.
Just watching it online, it was like who's next? You know, like Hunger Games. I mean, it's like, so tell us about just the travel to Mongolia and what that was like. And then I'm not a camper, so it would never be something. I mean, clearly this is not something that I would ever do. I am definitely a DQ, even though I came from my But like, tell us about that. Like, what was just the experience? We'll talk more about the horses, but just as a person, like the travel there and the accommodations, the food, the lodging, all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. So for the people that don't know, Mongolia is located on the opposite side of the world, above China and below Russia.
Because I did not know that.
a lot of people don't know where Mongolia is because no one goes there. To get there were two main ways from the eastern U.S. You could, and I did both, so I got to circumnavigate the world. But from Atlanta, I flew to Istanbul, Turkey, which is around a 10 and a half hour flight, had my layover, and then had another 10 and a half hour flight to Ulaanbaatar, the capital of Mongolia. Coming back, I did Ulaanbaatar to Seoul in South Korea, back to Atlanta. Mongolia isn't close to anyone, so people all over the world were having to make this epic trek to get there. And there were riders coming from the US, continental Europe, Australia, New Zealand, and the United Arab Emirates.
Like, so, literally all over the world.
All over.
Wow. Did you have to bring your own saddle? Did you have to bring?
No, you have to bring your own stirrups and leathers. And you can either use English gear or Western. And you use a specific endurance style saddle that has been designed for the Mongolian horses, because they are so much smaller than what we are used to riding. Those saddles are tight. They're built for the comfort of the horse, not for the comfort of the rider. Thankfully, we are also allowed to bring like a saddle saver. So either like a gel pad or a foam pad or a sheepskin, something like that. Once people arrived in Ulaanbaatar, most of us stayed at the Holiday Inn. It was where the race officially left from. And for anyone thinking about going, you should plan to be in Ulaanbaatar a couple days before the race, because lots of people had flight issues and you can't just hop on the next flight an hour later, because not all the planes are good. It's just not a high traffic airport to get to Ulaanbaatar. So stayed in the Holiday Inn. Ulaanbaatar is a modern city. So there's nothing really concerning about that. The driving is abysmal, but you're not driving, so watch out for the vehicles when you walk around. But other than that, you are in a Western city. It felt very safe. It was very easy to navigate. Upon the start of the race, we all loaded into two large charter vans and headed out for maybe like a 5.5 hour trip to the steppe. Part of this was on the
Can I
highway.
just ask you, when you say the step, because I
The
saw
steppe.
you, it's STEPPE. What is that?
Grasslands.
Okay.
So most of or a large part of Mongolia, especially in the center of the country, are just flat grasslands. So think like our plains. There are no trees. It is flat grass.
Okay. With holes.
holes, lots of holes. But yeah, so we get in these two chartered vans, buses. We drive off on the interstate, and then at some point they just turn off because it is flat grassland. A large amount of the roads in the country are not true roads. They are just paths that many cars drive on. So they're just kind of like dirt roads. And if it gets too rutted out and rough, they just move a few
Make
feet
a
over.
new one.
They make a new one. And so you're in these massive charter vans or charter buses, just off-roading it. You're like, is this thing gonna tip over? Like, what's going on? But I was really surprised at how well they did. And we got to the start camp. Everyone gets off the buses, and most of the crew were already at the base camp. So at the base camp, there was a large pavilion. They had the individual tents, which are called gers, which the Russian word is yurt. And so that's the traditional like house in Mongolia. And so we're greeted. Everyone's told to go find a ger. We would stay five people to a ger. So you just kind of like wander in with anyone that you may have met before. And
Like, do you want to be my roommate? Do you want to be my roommate? Okay.
basically, and so I had met before going another woman from Georgia. And so I basically was like, you want to be my roommate? We wandered in with a few other people, and ultimately, like, everyone becomes, I don't even know if friends is the right word. Like, you are a cohort. Like, everyone,
Yeah.
you're forced to rely on each other so much. You're put in such a unique situation that I feel comfortable sleeping with any of them. And also during the race, if as you were stopping, you might be sleeping with any of them. It's not, you don't have the girls' gear and the boys' gear. Like,
Wow.
you're all together. And so that was at the base camp. They had cooks, they had very fancy kind of like outhouses. So it was a ultimately it was just a pit, but it had like Western style toilets and the stalls, and they had tent showers. And so that was had all the comforts of home, basically,
At base camp,
at base camp.
did that change?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So after the race, every time you change a horse, it is called a horse station. This is the horse stations where they were the homes of a Mongol herding family. And they have an arrangement with the race that where they open up their homes, they put up additional gers, and they will host the riders. So they prepare the food, we use their horses, they will let us sleep there. And you got to go from like incredibly traditional families to more modern or affluent families that it might be a permanent structure and they may have Wi-Fi, to very traditional, like these are, this is how people lived hundreds of years ago,
Wow.
with the exception of maybe like a motorbike to get around. You would sleep multiple people to a ger, and just say some would have beds, which would be just kind of like a platform bed. Some you were just sleeping on the ground. So everyone is encouraged to take a sleeping mat. So it's an air mat that you blow up, and then a sleeping bag. You
And you're
also cannot.
carrying this with you everywhere you go, like you have
Yes.
backpacks and you're carrying that.
You are allowed to carry 11 pounds of gear, period.
Okay.
And so you have a saddle bag and then a hydration pack. And it is amazing how quickly you can fill up 11 pounds, because by the time you add in, my sleeping bag was a pound. And then you add in the air mat, and that might be half a pound. And then you're like, well, I feel like I should take a change of clothes, or, I'm going to take this rope. Or it's just.
One change of clothes for 9 days.
And when I go back, I probably won't take any. Like,
Oh, gosh.
there's just because you get Everyone is disgusting and everyone is exhausted and everything is dirty and it doesn't
Just
matter
doesn't
anymore.
matter.
So like, you can take like clean underwear, but at the end of the day, like you're gross. You're really gross. And then you didn't have to sleep in the gares. If you were caught, so we had to stop riding at 7 p.m., regardless of where you were. You can ride up to an hour afterwards, but you get time penalties. If you ride past 8 p.m., you're out of the race. So
you've got to make it to that checkpoint.
Or you're camping.
Oh.
So camping could involve literally like camping under the stars. Other people, some people found like goat sheds to sleep in, which may not work out well because, you know, goat sheds are not incredibly hygienic. And then you can also, though, Mongolia is a culture of hospitality. So 9 out of 10 times you can ride up to a complete stranger's house and they will let you stay with them.
Wow, that's cool.
It is amazing. Like, I had a family, I was getting near to the time and it was like a question of, do I face the time penalty? Like, do I keep going? My leg was like going to fall off. I was really like overriding for that day. And I had this family that they were having kind of a family reunion and they saw me, they're having a big grill, like cookout. And so they were just so excited and like waving me in because they had no idea why these like strange people were riding by all day. You know, they weren't in the know. And so I stop and they have me get off the horse and they Arag, which is fermented mare's milk, is like a traditional welcoming drink. They give me that. They're giving me food. These people have no clue who I am.
How
you know,
nice.
It's
That's amazing.
Not a common language. Yeah. And then ultimately, thankfully, one of the wives was out from the city. She did speak a little bit of English, so I was able to communicate. Asked if I could stay. They're like, absolutely. And then when that happens, you have to let the race headquarters know. Because they're going to send out a vet to check on the horse first. Like, they want to make sure the horse has food, has access to food and water, and has an acceptable heart rate, is in acceptable condition. And then, by the way, they'll also check on the people and make sure they're okay. And so all the vets and like team support all have a translator with them. So the translator would come and like was able to fully explain the situation and why I had shown up at their doorstep and why I was asking to stay. The family was incredibly gracious. They took over care of my horse. They set up, instead of me sleeping in the family gare, they set up like a Western style 5-person family tent. And I'm like, well, this is cool because I haven't been alone in several days. So I'm like there, like I want to like redo all my stuff. And I get a knock and the woman asked if her two daughters, who were maybe like, I don't know, 5 and 8, could sleep with me. Like, they wanted to sleep with me. And I'm like, all right, like, that's cool. Like, this would never happen in America, but like, I'm comfortable with these children sleeping with a complete stranger. Knock yourself out.
Sure.
And then maybe 10 minutes later, the mother asked if she could join because the men were having a party and she wanted to go to bed. So we're all like in this tent, like bundled together, like sharing photos, like, because we couldn't really speak well enough to like have in-depth conversations.
Yeah.
Like, show you a picture of my horse and like here's a picture of your cat and
I think that's amazing.
Great.
What an amazing experience.
And so many people had it. Like, that is part of the Mongol Derby experience. Like, you were encouraged to stay with a family and really become part of the culture.
That sounds just, I don't even, I mean, it just, like you said, I know that they expect that and you mm-hmm. expected that that could possibly happen, but just hearing how hospitable and kind, like, that just brings back that, you know, maybe there's really good people out there.
Yes.
You know? Okay. So you've started the race.
Yep.
And well, first you had the fall, then you start the race and you're going through. How far were you when you met that family?
That was the end of the first day. So I met them very early on.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So then how long did it take you to finish? And I know the answer to this because I watched all of it happen online. And it was really cool to see the winners, you know, really team up together. I mean, it was just, it gives me chills, like how cool the whole experience seemed like it was. But just kind of tell us about the rest of the race and when you finished and that kind of thing.
Absolutely. The horse that I was riding when I stopped with the family, he was my second horse. It's called a Nadam horse. It was their race horses. So you pretty much had three main types of horses that you could pull. There was either the herding horse, like which they use for working. Like, so it's your general like ranch cattle horse or quarter horse. It had speed control. It had direction control. They were great little workaholics and would do their job. Then you would have like the kid's first pony, who was super safe, but he might choose to walk 40 kilometers and you're not making it go any faster. You also have the Nadam horses, who you're not going to stop. No matter what you do,
wow,
they're going. And so I drew this horse, and it was the most incredible experience because, like, even in archery, like, I go pretty slowly. Like, I meet the time requirements, but it's like a nice canter. I don't ever gallop. And I galloped for 40 kilometers.
Wow.
And like, my brain was like trying to come up with ways to slow this horse down. Like, if I run it in 2 feet of water, like in a creek, like, will it stop? No. Like, if I run it through a bog, will it stop? No. Like, if I run it up this mountain, will it stop? No. And like, he wasn't stopping. He wasn't stupid. He like, it was a very like catty horse. Like,
yeah,
this fit went in the hole. Like, they were out. Like, he was going and I was just in his way. And he was difficult because you're navigating by GPS. And so the GPS will show an arrow of your general direction, but you should then zoom in and out to see the topographical lines, because you don't want to run your horses up a mountain. That makes them tired. But my horse, this horse, we could only go by arrows. He refused to slow down to allow me to navigate.
And
so like, we would blow past people, but then like, they were able to take shortcuts that I couldn't take because we weren't allowed to pause to navigate. And so then I like blow past him again, like 30 minutes later. But riding that horse just really did in my knee because I couldn't slow him down. Like, there was no break. So then the next day I got a bit of a slower horse that was more stumbly. And so it really hurt to have like that internal knee pressure. So like, if a horse is spooking or tripping, you want to close your legs. And it was very painful.
Wow.
And then I got on a horse after him that was, he was one of those that like, I'm now going to walk. And he would get really upset if other horses left him, but he would make no effort to go any faster. And so he finally just got frustrated. It was standing in the road, angry. I couldn't kick because I had no left leg. And it was just like, all right, like, someone has to come get me because the horse is not having a good time. I'm not having a good time. And I can't get off and walk him in. And so I had to be carried forward the next 5 kilometers. And then I tried to remount. And that horse was super spooky. And the like 100 feet from the horse station, he had spooked like bad 3 times. I'm like, okay, I'm calling it because I'm not making it 40 kilometers on this horse. And then I got to learn about the blood wagon. So
the blood wagon?
The blood wagon. So illness and injury are a part of the Mongol Derby. And if you don't want to withdraw, you can drop to, it's called the adventure category. So that's where they will carry you forward. You can take days off and then rejoin when you are able. And for those people, for us walking wounded, they have the blood wagon. And the blood wagon is a big, like, 9-person van. And we had a Mongolian driver. And then we had, like, a Mongolian, I'm not sure what his official title was. He said he was captain of the blood wagon. So he was, like, our tour guide.
Okay.
And so it was great because you're, like, tired and in pain, or, you know, people are having food poisoning or heat exhaustion, various reasons people ended up in the blood wagon. And then we got to, like, go get ice cream, or now we're going to take a side trip to ride camels.
I thought you rode camels. I thought I saw that. I wondered how that.
Yeah. So like, they tried to keep us entertained and having a good experience, even though we couldn't ride. And so after several days of just hanging out, I was able to get on to go back and join the race for the last 3 legs. And it was all I could do. Like, the last horse had a halo and wings. And he got me over it, but like, I was having to take hydrocodone every hour because
you're in so much pain from your knee and your back.
From my knee, thankfully the back had been resolved. Like, I got steroid injections 3 days before I went to Mongolia. Those were playing, like, helped out. But yeah, I finished the race with a woman who had at least one broken rib from a nasty fall. So she was really struggling to breathe, and then I couldn't walk. And so we made a fantastic pair, but we stubbornly were able to like stick together. We knew we were moving slow.
But you did it.
Yeah, we did it. We both crossed the finish line, and everyone, all the racers were so supportive. No matter, like, you know, Michael Pollard was one of the first people to come up and hug me and congratulate me. And for those that don't know, Michael Pollard was one of the 4 winners of this year's race. And then like shortly afterwards, Issa came up, who was another one of the winners, and there was so much support because everyone is aware of how much the riders have gone through. Everyone is aware that things happen, like, there, but, you know, for the grace of God go I, you know, if you want to think of it that way, because a lot of things were just bad luck. People weren't, no one just quit. Things happened. And so it speaks a lot to the resilience of the riders and the type of people that want this challenge. Like, no one, there was one woman that knew what she was in for, because it was her third time trying to complete the race. And thankfully she did it, because she had to drop to adventure class the last two times. But the rest of us were just showing up and hoping. So yeah, it was an amazing feeling.
It sounds like it. And just, I know Michael personally, he's such a good guy. And for our listeners, Michael has ridden at the 5-star eventing level and has represented the United States at team competitions. But he is just genuinely such a good guy. And when I saw that, the leaders were struggling too. And, you know, and then they supported each other and waited for each other, and they crossed the finish line together. And I imagine that came from Michael, because that really is the kind of guy that he is.
So actually they waited on Michael. Wow. Michael drew one of the horses that you couldn't make go. No matter what he did, he's an amazing equestrian.
Yeah.
I saw some of the psycho horses he did ride, and he stayed on those, but you can't make some of these things go. And so the other three competitors were gone, and they all decided Michael had been riding with Anna Bowden, who is from England. They had not met until this race, but they'd been riding the majority of the race together. So it would make sense in a way that Anna would wait for him to finish together. But the two gentlemen from the United Arab Emirates, both of them are endurance riders. Like, those two and Anna and Michael had been battling it out. And if you listen to Michael Pollard's podcast on Eventing Nation, he talks about it. He would just get so frustrated because he and Anna would be in the lead, and then here they come, and then here they come. And so they're leapfrogging this whole time. And then even they decided that they should wait and finish together.
Wow.
It was a first for the Mongol Derby.
Wow.
Yeah.
So is there a prize? Is there?
So I know this is only audio, for our video, though. This little blue scarf right there, that's what you get.
Everybody gets that? Everybody, even if you win?
There's no prize for the winner.
Wow. But being able to say that you finished.
Absolutely.
It's actually kind of cool.
You get major bragging rights. And everyone that goes across the finish lines gets the egg, the fermented mare's milk, and they get a blue scarf.
And the amazing feeling of accomplishment.
Absolutely. And when I finished, I was in a serious amount of pain. And I'm I say that, there are other people that had worse injuries than me. But I was in a lot of pain for me.
Well, and you have a very high pain tolerance, so I imagine anybody else, that would have just taken them down, and they would have had to been wheeled across the finish line.
Yeah, I'm like, you know what? I'm done. I'm good. I had the experience. I did as much as I could. I don't have to come back. And then I had a nap and a gin and tonic, and I'm like, so 2027. And I had my interview with Eric Cooper, who's in charge of the marketing. He was the one doing all the interviews and the live streaming. And I'm like, so 2026. He's like, we'll do 2026.
Wow, Jessica, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Well, just to finish this up, what was your favorite? I know it's probably hard to decide, but what was your favorite part of the race, the adventure?
There is something magical and almost impossible for us to experience. And it's the feeling of riding horizon to horizon to horizon to horizon over and over and over again without encountering a fence, without encountering a road, without encountering brick and mortar buildings. It's just open space.
Wow.
And you're forced to live in the moment, because the ground could eat you. Your horse could spook. You don't you're trying to constantly figure out where you're going. And so you're forced to be in the present. You can't be thinking about work or, family, or my friend said X. You're living in this massive environment. And I think that is a life-changing experience that everyone who rides it has.
That is so cool. We'll definitely have you back next year to compare experiences. And you know, and I just appreciate your time so much. I learned so much. I was so looking forward to this time with you. So thank you so much for being here.
You are very welcome. Thank you for having me.
So I would highly recommend to anyone, you know, our listeners, to Google the Mongol Derby and to find it on Facebook. It really was spectacular to watch, and they did a phenomenal job in videoing and keeping people up to date with what was going on. So anyway, I want to thank y'all for listening to the Main Street Minute, and we will see you again soon.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please let us know. Email support at mainstreetmarket.com. Please share and join us again next week for another episode of the Main Street Minute, right here on the Equus Radio Network.